नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास साहब की जय। प्रेम से गौ श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री ज्ञान आशीर्वाद आदि गौर वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गौरव बिना शाम सुंदर की जय। श्री श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। श्री नवरी धाम की जय। धाम की जय। श्री जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय। तुलसी देवी की जय। श्री शिव की देवी की जय। गंगा माई की जय। गौर प्रेम नंदी हरि हरि गो। श्री न्यू गोवर्धन धाम की जय। शांतवेद भक्त वृंद की जय। ओम ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज। 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 ओम ग्लोरी टू श्री श्री गौरांग श्री गौरांग। नारायण नाम नमस्कृत चंद्रम शैवम नरोत्तमं देवी सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जाय मुदीरय नस्तापरेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भगवत सेवाय भगवती रामश्लोके भक्ति भक्तिनाय शिखी। Now we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, starting with the 10th verse of the 8th canto, 6th chapter, correct? Vai Agra Vipi Arasi Vai Madhya Vasi Tvaya Anta Ashi Idam Atma Tantre Tvam Adi Anto Chagato Sya Madhyam Kanta Sya Nisneva Parak Parasmat Vayagra Shitai Madhyasi Vayagra Shitai Madhyasi Vayanta Siddhita Matma Matantre Vayanta Siddhita Matma Matantre Vayanta Siddhita Matma Matantre Tvamariranta Jagatosya Modyam Tvamariranta Jagatosya Madyam Tatasya Vitsneva Parasmat Katasya Vinsnena Purak Prasmar. Anybody else? Strange meter. Tvai. Unto you. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Agre. In the beginning. Asi. There was. Tvai. Unto you. Madhye. In the middle. Asi, there was. Vai, unto you. Ante, in the end. Asi, there was. Idam, all of this cosmic manifestation. Atmatantre, fully under your control. Tvam, your lordship. Adi, beginning. Antaha, end. Jagataha, of a cosmic manifestation. Asya, of this. Madhyam, middle. Katasya, of an earthen pot. It's naiva, like the earth. Parak, transcendental. Parasmat, because of being achieved. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord, who are always fully independent, this entire cosmic manifestation arises from you, rests upon you, and ends in you. Your lordship is the beginning, sustenance, and end of everything, like the earth, which is the cause of an earthen pot, which supports the pot, and to which the pot, when broken, finally returns. Responsibly, my dear Lord, who are always fully independent, this entire cosmic manifestation arises from you, rests upon you, and ends in you. Your lordship is the beginning, sustenance, and end of everything. Like the earth, which is the cause of an earthen pot, which supports the pot, and to which the pot, when broken, finally returns. I'll read the next verse, because there's no purport here. Tvam Maya Atma Ashrayaya Vayedam Nirma Aya Vishvam Tad Anupra Avishta Ashanti Yukta Manasa Manasino Guna Yamaye Yayuganam Vipaschitaha Tvam Your Lordship Mayaya by your eternal energy Atma Ashrayaya whose existence is under your shelter Svaya emanated from yourself Idam this Nirmaya for the sake of eating Vishvam the entire universe Tat unto it Anupravishta you enter Pashyanti they see Yuktaha persons in touch with you Manasa by an elevated mind Manishinaha
people with advanced consciousness
Guna
of material qualities
Yavaye
in the transformation
Abhi
although
Agunam
still untouched
by the material qualities Vipaschitaha
those who are fully aware
of the truth of Shastra.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada.
O Supreme, you are independent in yourself and do not take help from others. Through your own potency, you create this cosmic manifestation and enter into it. Those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, who are fully in knowledge of the authoritative Shastra, and who, through the practice of Bhakti Yoga, are cleansed of all material contamination, can see with clear minds that although you exist within the transformations of the material qualities, your presence is untouched by these qualities. Responsibly, O Supreme, you are independent
in yourself
and do not take
help from others.
Through your own potency,
you create this cosmic manifestation
and enter into it.
Those who are advanced
in Krishna consciousness,
who are fully in knowledge
of the authoritative Shastra,
and who,
through the practice of Bhakti Yoga,
are cleansed of all material contamination,
can see with clear minds
that although you exist within the transformations of the material qualities,
your presence is untouched by these qualities.
It's a really long sentence.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara hetunanena konteya jagadvipa varivartate. This material nature, working under my direction, O son of Kunti, is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. The material energy creates, maintains, and devastates the entire cosmic manifestation because of directions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enters this universe as Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu, but is untouched by the material qualities. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord refers to Maya, the external energy which creates the material world, as Mama Maya, my energy. Because this energy works under the full control of the Lord, these facts can be realized only by those who are well-versed in Vedic knowledge and advanced in Krishna consciousness.
Mukam karoti vachalam pangam langayate girim yat kripata hamvande shukadrudina karane.
So commenting on this first text, number 10, I'll read again. My dear Lord, who are always fully independent, this entire cosmic manifestation arises from you, rests upon you, and ends in you.
Your lordship is the beginning substance and the end of everything, like the earth, which is the cause of an earthen pot, which supports the pot, and which the pot, when broken, finally returns. So the demigods here are addressing the Supreme Lord, not as an ordinary person, but they're giving a little bit of who he is, the history of who the Supreme Lord actually is and what he does and how he creates the world and how he destroys the whole universe and whole world. So it's kind of like a custom or a tradition amongst denizens of higher planetary systems, especially the devatas or the demigods, to address Krishna first saying who he is. There's a tendency to be in the West, at least, to be very impersonal, not to even say a person's name, just say, did you get my email, or how are you, or what's happening, or something like that. But here we have several verses just identifying who the demigods are talking with. They're just not talking to an ordinary person, they're talking to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in a way, this address is a kind of a prayer. They're not just saying hello and how are you, but they're saying who he is. And this is a very important thing that we can all learn from. Yeah, thank you. To be personal, to not only say a person's name, but to identify them and ask them how their family is and what they're doing today and you know what they've done so far today and what they did last week and what they're responsible for and so on. So this is a kind of etiquette that's followed by the denizens of the higher regions. And it's very instructive for all of us that instead of course we're personless, instead of being impersonal and just saying things matter-of-factly, we can talk to a person like we know them, like they're part of our family, like they're important, and they have a bit of a history. So going on to the next verse, I'll read again. O Supreme, you are independent in yourself and do not take help from others. Through your own potency, you create this cosmic manifestation and enter into it. Those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, who are fully in knowledge of the authoritative Shastra, and who, through the practice of Bhakti Yoga, are cleansed of all material contamination, can see with clear minds that although you exist within transformations of the material qualities, your presence is untouched by these qualities. And in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that actually even Maya, who keeps us trapped in this material world, is acting under the direction of Krishna, not independently. It's similar to the way that the wardens in jails and the police, they're acting under the government. And even though they have a kind of thankless task, they have to do cruel things, sometimes they have to kill people, but they're acting under the government, which is benevolent and doesn't really appreciate the criminal minds and criminal activity. So it has to have a police force. And even very demonic people were aware of that. The Ravanas and the Aranyakashipus, they had their police forces because they try to keep a certain sense of law and order. Law and order is very important. So Krishna starts out, Prabhupada starts out in the purport by saying that the material nature is actually working under my direction, he says. O son of Kunti, and is producing all moving and non-moving beings by through. This manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So sometimes people ask that if God is very kind and wants the best for everyone, why is there so much evil in the world? Why is there so much crime and killing and devastation and drug use and why is this all happening? So one of the answers to that, of course there's many answers, one of the answers is that we want to enjoy drugs, we want to enjoy illicit sex, we want to enjoy eating, and we want to enjoy intoxication. So we're sort of creating our own hell, so to speak. We want to enjoy things, but we suffer from it. One time a devotee was giving a class, and he said he was kind of amazed how people, when he was in college, were getting intoxicated drunk on liquor on the weekends, and having a terrible hangover on the next morning, and really suffering like anything. But then on the following week, they would do the same thing. They would take the same amount of beer or wine or whiskey or whatever, and get the same hangover, and it would go on week after week after week. So in a sense, that even though God is very, very kind, he gives us the free will, gives us enough rope to hang ourselves on, so to speak. And this is an example, that this drinking and getting hungover the next morning is an example of how we just naturally do things that are not good for us because we enjoy them. And that's what keeps us in this material world, doing a lot of things that are not good for us because we like them, because we enjoy them. But there's always some kind of bad results afterwards. Not always, but generally, especially in terms of intoxication. And everything pretty much has limits. There's just a certain limit as to how much we can enjoy it, and there's sometimes very severe suffering afterwards. So Prabhupada is talking about how Krishna enters into everything. You know, he's in everything. He's in the skies, in the rocks, he's in the trees, he's in the air, he's actually the sun sometimes. So this is a very high level of realization, to realize that Krishna is actually everywhere. And then sometimes Prabhupada was dismissive of people who don't go any further than that. They just think that God is everywhere. So one of the arguments to that is that if God is everywhere, then he must be in the temple. So therefore we worship deities. And then people are very critical of Krishna consciousness. Why do you worship these dolls, these statues? But some of those very same people think that Krishna is everywhere. But they don't think he can't be in the temple because, you know, we're idol worshippers, and that's not good. According to some religious philosophies, we want to call them religious. So Prabhupada is talking about how Krishna enters into everything because he is there and he's a witness. Sometimes we think we're not being watched, and very often crime is done under the cloak of darkness, robberies and things like that. And sometimes these criminals, they read law books and they read books about how criminals get punished, and they know the laws, that the laws say that you have to go to jail or you have to be executed or you have to go into prison, but they like the thrill of it. There's a certain thrill in engaging in criminal activity and not getting caught. And there's a saying that it's better to live a very short, exciting life than to live a long and dull life. So this is one of the things that some criminals really think it's kind of a game to avoid getting caught. And they think, well, it was worth it because maybe I was a crook for 2 or 3 years, but I had a good time. So it didn't matter if I have to go to jail for 8 years or 9 years or I have to get executed, because heck, I had a good time. It was worth it. So that's what keeps us in this material world. It's a different dimension of life than the spiritual world, which is always a happiness. So I think it's in the Bangkok temple. There's a statue of the demigods and the demons, because this chapter is the demigods and demons declare a truce, and truces are kind of interesting because there's a motivation for a truce. The motivation is to stop the carnage. There's also a motivation that the good guys can win over the bad guys. And later on in this chapter, Prabhupada talks about, and Krishna gives the advice to the demigods that they have to apply the what he calls the logic of the snake and the mouse. And the snake and the mouse, although they're natural enemies, they formed a truce. And the snake would take advantage, even though there was a truce. And here are the demigods, even though they churned this mountain, there was all sorts of things that came out of it, poisonous and things like that. There was also nectar. And in the end, the demigods won the tug of war because they would get the nectar. It's a very long, involved thing how they got the nectar. But this happens. And in the temple, in the airport, I think it's in Bangkok, there's a statue of this, of the demons and the demigods churning this big mountain. Yeah, it's in Bangkok. And I think they're life size or near life size. It's a very large sculpture. It occupies a great amount of space because it's a very famous part. And Prabhupada had his devotees paint this, make a painting, and even, I don't know if he had to make a sculpture of it, but it's a very famous thing. So they made this truce, and the demons thought this truce is a very good thing. But what happened with the snake and the mouse, I don't know if that's the right word, but that's where the translation goes. It's the logic of the snake and the mouse. The snake and the mouse made a truce, and the truce was that the mouse would eat through the basket and make a hole in it, so that the mouse and the snake, both of them, would escape But then, after they escaped the basket, the snake would eat the mouse. So this is a similar kind of truce that the demigods they formed a truce so that they could ultimately win and get the nectar. So there's, and one of the things that Prabhupada has commented on in some of his lectures is that there's always the good guys against the bad guys, even in the higher planetary systems, the demigods and the demons, the suras and the asuras, there's always a continual animosity or war going on between those two, and sometimes it happens. So what we see in this material world is, I mean, that's material world too, it's just a higher level of the material world. So many people try to attain this Svargaloka or the heaven or the heavenly planets, but they're also in a very good condition, but the demigods who are living a long life and a life of very, very high enjoyment are also very fearful of the demons who are, there's always a war going on that they're going to attack any day, any day, any time, without warning. So there's kind of like a war going on. There's a saying in English that discretion is the better part of valor. And I was talking about, there was a Russian general, Kutuzov, I think that was his name, Kutuzov, he's a very famous person. Anyway, he was a very violent warrior, but he was also very intelligent. And one of the things he did was that he abandoned the city of Moscow. That was in 1812. And Moscow then was easy to abandon because it was a lot smaller. The population was only about 270 some odd thousand, whereas it's several million now. Anyway, he left instructions for his cohorts or his subordinate generals to not only to abandon the city, but to burn all of the granaries and all of them so that there was no food in the city. And there were no people there. So when there was, well, it was part of the Napoleonic Wars, and when Napoleon came to Moscow and found it abandoned, and that there was nothing to eat, he thought, okay, this is not going to happen. We're not going to fight nobody. And we don't have anything to eat. So he marched them all back to Paris. And many of them, thousands, I've heard as many as 300,000 perished in the cold, marching back through Russia, through the western part of Russia, which was snowbound, and many people died. So this was a way of using the general's intelligence of not fighting and still winning the war. Our discretion is the better part of valor. So even though he was a very violent and fearful warrior, but he didn't always use those. He used the tactic of this particular tactic was very effective. It's very difficult to defeat an army that doesn't exist. So anyway, discretion is the better part of valor. So this truce that was made between the demons and the demigods was ultimately to the advantage of the demigods, because they got the nectar. And it's a very hard thing to process how, for example, the moon is being constantly, I mean, this is part of another thing, but being constantly assailed by a demonic force instead of an eclipse. It's a very unusual thing. So I think I'll stop here and ask if anyone has anything you want to say or ask. I'll try to put some insight. I don't know, in future editions, maybe these long sentences may be reduced. I don't know. They just seem very long. I mean, I kind of got lost reading them. I don't know if you did too, but it was very difficult. Anyway, it's just part of the art of translating, I guess. So I'll read the verses again. My dear Lord, who are always fully independent, this is verse 10. My dear Lord, who are always fully independent, this entire cosmic manifestation arises from you, rests upon you, and ends in you. Your Lordship is the beginning, sustenance, and end of everything, like the earth, which is the cause of the broken pot, which supports the pot, and to which the pot, when broken, finally returns. And then text 11 says, O Supreme, you are independent in yourself and do not take help from others. Through your own potency, you create this cosmic manifestation and enter into it. Those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, who are fully in knowledge of the authoritative Shastra, and who, through the practice of Bhakti Yoga, are cleansed of all material contamination, can see with clear minds that although you exist within the transformations of the material qualities, your presence is untouched by these qualities. One thing I probably ought to mention here is that this philosophy is of Chintya Veda Tattva, or simultaneously one and different, is kind of included in these verses. That Krishna, someone asked Prabhupada once in a class, well, how can God be everywhere and yet in his own place at the same time? So he gave the example, he held up a flower, and he said, this flower is nothing but the shining energy of God, but it's not God. So the word achintya is used to mean that achintya veda tattva, simultaneous, one and different. Achintya means inconceivable. It's actually inconceivable that something can be in a place and not in a place at the same time. So achintya veda tattva is the unique philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's the unique philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And anyone who is not really deeply versed in Krishna consciousness can debate with just about any philosopher of the world or any learned person. And it's a very sublime philosophy to think that something can be, achintya veda tattva can be simultaneously one and different. Krishna never sets foot out of Vrindavan. In his original form, he's constantly enjoying, he's always enjoying, and yet in another form, he's in everything. He enters, as Prabhupada mentions here, as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, into every... Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is untouched by material qualities. So the Supreme Lord, even though he's everywhere, because he's in his own abode at the same time, he's untouched by material qualities. That's part of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that God can be ultimately in charge of everything, but he is not affected. And another example of how this can happen is that a very well-to-do business owner may have a lot of workers and a lot of factories, but he doesn't actually have to go there or be personally involved. So he's simultaneously one and different. But in the spiritual sense, to be a achintya veda tattva always and everywhere is inconceivable, because wealthy persons have to die at some point. So they can, but Krishna never dies. That's one thing that is unique about him. And another thing that people sometimes ask is that everything has a beginning and an end. And so who is God's father, and where did he come from? Where is his beginning, and where does he end? And the answer given was that there is no beginning. That's what makes God God, that God has no beginning. He's eternal, and he has no end. So he's eternal. So if you have any comments or questions, now's the time to put them to me. Or any, you know, just say whatever comes to your mind. Yes?
You're speaking about being addressing people and being personal. Mm. So I've come across the words that don't like to be called Prabhu. I was wondering if you could make a comment on that.
She made the comment that sometimes people don't like to be called Prabhu. And it's probably because they don't like it, because it's kind of impersonal. It's just like saying buddy or pal or something like that. It's kind of nice, and you know, it's kind of like a formal, it's like saying mister. But people don't like it because it's a little too formal. I know when I was chanting in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco in 1967, I had the permit to be chanting in my pocket, and someone complained, so I was approached by some authority in the park commission who was working on the weekend, unusual thing, and she called me sir. And I really didn't like it. I really kind of took objection to that, even though it was a kind of a formal, kind of nice thing to say to someone. But it's in a way, it's kind of impersonal to be called sir or madam, in the case of a lady. So maybe people don't like it because it is kind of, you know, impersonal to call someone mister or sir. It's nice. It's a very kind of congenial form of address. But at the same time, it's kind of impersonal. It's better to call someone by their name. I mean, I think so. Maybe you can add Mr. or Sir or Prabhu after the name, or Madam. But it's good to use the name because it's more personal. And devotees, we're supposed to be personalists. Vaishnavas means personalism. God is a person as opposed to a force. It's part of our philosophy. So if we extend that to human beings, besides human beings who aren't Vaishnavas, all human beings, and even the animals that live in this place have names. And sometimes they're responsive to their names. You call them by their name, and they come to you, just like dogs. If you call them by their name, after hearing it so many times, they begin to recognize, oh, that's me, and they come. Anyway, that's just what I think.
Thank you.
I don't like to be called Maharaj or Prabhu either. In fact, if someone calls Maharaj this or Maharaj that, I don't know which Maharaj they're talking about. And I think it's the same thing with a man or a sir. You know, we don't know who they're talking about sometimes. So I ended my class at 8:15, following the clock. But I guess we have a little time for questions or comments if there's any to be made. Yes? No? Give everyone... Yes? Yeah, well, there's a philosophy that says that there's no such thing as good and bad. Everything is equal or good. And it's kind of like a very primitive thing to think that there's good people and bad people in the world, and, you know, because there's good in everyone. But I think the Vaishnava philosophy is that even good people do bad things. There was a big drug dealer who was doing good things. He was building soccer fields and schools and giving money to the poor and all that. At the same time, he was responsible for killing thousands of people. So, you know, there was something, and dealing drugs, it has a good side to it because people want them, and you're giving them what they want. So there is a good thing to it, even though they ultimately get around without usually. Anyway, that's just a comment. But there are good and there is bad. I mean, I don't know too much about popular culture, but in films, the ones that are usually the most successful from my point of view are the ones where they're the good against the evil, good against evil, and one of the sides wins. Unfortunately, it's not always a good side, but they do have such things. And people like this kind of tension between good and bad. It's a good thing to see this good and bad. But there's a philosophy that says that there's no such thing as good and bad. And in a way, that's a step towards spiritual life. But the Vaishnava thinks that there's Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sakya Kabunai, that there's a spiritual consciousness in all people. And it just has to be awakened, so to speak. And that's part of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, is to awaken that natural goodness or that natural God consciousness that's there in everybody, even though they're not manifesting it at all sometimes. Yes?
I was thinking, there is morality. You know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for those who seek victory, I am morality. Mm. So, you know, you're saying in one sense there is no good and bad, but Krishna is saying there is morality, and morality will triumph over immorality.
Mm. Good point. Did hear what she said? Okay, I think we'll end here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.